Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the second installment of Unbound by Anne Berg. Early the next morning, Uncle Jim walks with me past the row of cabins, what's been my home forever, and up the big hill, what's spotted with tiny flowers. At the top of the hill, we stop under a giant elm. Uncle Jim stoops down, his eyes set right cross from my eyes, and his hands curve round my face. "Your mama told me the thoughts run in circles in your head, Grace. These dangerous thoughts, you best keep 'em to yourself." "Mama already told me that," I say. But soon as the words pop out, I'm sorry. Uncle Jim's hands is rough as tree bark, but his voice is gentle as the barn swallow. "I's meanin' it, Gracie. Keep 'em thoughts to yourself, or you'll be bringin' us all a lot of trouble and pain. Your mama's heart would break if Master sent you away. All our hearts would break." He smells my hair and makes his voice real low. "Got to keep your thoughts tucked private in your mind, where white folks won't find 'em." "Why? I got skin pale as any white folk. I heard Mama say so herself. It's my light skin what's got me called to the big house." Uncle Jim shakes his head. "Don't matter what color the good Lord painted you," he says. "You know that. Law says you're brown, same as your mama." The law's got a problem seeing what's right in front of its face, I think. But this time I say nothing, and we keep walking to the big house, what's on the other side of the hill. The side of the big house is a covered walkway with a cabin attached. A woman, older in mama, but not as old as Aunt Sarah, and twice as wide, stands waiting outside. Uncle Jim nods at her.
"Tempy, this here's our Grace." "Gracie, this is Aunt Tempy."
The woman smiles.
"Hello, Grace. Last time I saw you, you was no bigger'n a pitcher plant."
She looks at Uncle Jim.
"Time passes." "That it does, Tempy. Too quick or too slow. I best get back."
He looks at me with sorrowful eyes and touches my face.
"Remember what we talked about, Gracie."
I nod and will my tears from falling. A heavy grieving sags inside me, and my thoughts leap and tumble. Uncle Jim and Mama is just down the hill. If I got sent away, I might never see Mama or Aunt Sarah, Uncle Jim, or the boys ever again. Mama was younger than me last time she saw her Mama.
"Come inside, Grace."
Aunt Tempy's voice is deep and scratchy, like she's got prickles sitting in her throat, too. Still, it's a voice with kindness in it, what makes me feel safe. We step into the cabin. A huge fireplace stretches from one corner to another. Sun's not even up yet, but a big black pot hangs over a fire, what's lighting the room and warming it like midday. Already a tray of biscuits sits in a turtle-shaped hole in the wall. Aunt Tempy spreads her arms.
"This here's our kitchen, Grace. We mostly be working in here."
In the middle of the room is a big table what holds a basket of strawberries and a covered tub. Giant spoons and buckets hang from the ceiling, and there's a row of chairs set against the wall. Aunt Tempy sniffs the biscuits and nods for me to follow her through a small door what don't close all the way. This room looks like our cabin, except it's smaller and has a wooden floor. In the corner, there's a small table what's got a basket, some sewing on it, a chair, a footstool, and a tiny fireplace what don't look big enough to warm a fly.
"This is where we sleep," Aunt Tempy says.
A gown hangs on the back of the door, and another smaller gown is draped over the chair. A bunch more baskets is piled in the corner,
and another gown is draped across a narrow wooden bed, what must belong to Aunt Tempy. She pulls a pallet from under the bed. "This is for you," she says. The cabin gets even smaller, and all my rightiness shrinks to a mournful sadness. Aunt Tempy nods at the gown on the bed. "You's washed up real nice," she says, "but the missus wants you wearing a shirt tail what's never been near the field. Go ahead now, get changed. We got work to do." I quick take off the gown Mama made me and slip the new gown over my head. Mama was wrong. The new gown scratches same as the old. It smells like chicken feathers and fills my mouth with a bitter taste like molasses what's been spoiled. I follow Aunt Tempy back into the kitchen. She points to the basket filled with strawberries. "You can slice the berries, Grace," she says. She shows me how to wrap my fingers around the knife handle, cut out the green leaves, and push the blade through the berries. "Mind you, slice them thin, and be careful not to slice your fingers." She lifts the cover off the tub. Inside is a mound of chopped pork flecked with green. Aunt Tempy starts rolling and squishing small fists of meat into little cakes. There's a million questions tumbling in my mind, but my voice feels trapped like a weevil in sap. Lucky for me, Aunt Tempy starts talking up a storm, telling me most everything I want to know. "There's three others what live in the big house and eat with us in the kitchen," she says. "Uncle Moses, Anna, and Jordan. Uncle Moses waits on Master Allen, helps him dress, drives his wagon, and tends his horses. Anna waits on the missus, helps her dress, washes the clothes, sweeps, and dusts. Jordan's only job is bringing food from the kitchen and serving Master Allen's table." Seems white folks in the big house can't do much for themselves. Aunt Tempy lowers her voice. "You won't see much of Master Allen," she shakes her head. "But the missus, she comes in most every day." Aunt Tempy stops rolling and looks at me, her eyes steady and serious. "The missus is mean as a hornet what's protecting its nest. Stay away from the missus." Hearing Aunt Tempy talk about the missus and remembering what Aunt Sarah said gives my legs and arms prickly bumps like when old George Cooper first told me about the swamp witch. When the kitchen door opens, I jump. Aunt Tempy laughs. "Nothing to be scared of, Grace. Anna's still helping the missus get out of her nightclothes. This here is Jordan. Jordan, meet Grace. Grace will be helping me in the kitchen." Jordan's skin's just a shade darker than mine, with lots of little dots crossing his nose and cheeks, and wavy hair the color of the jewel weed what grows in the swamp. He tells me hello, but don't smile, and I wonder if he's missing his mama too. Course, Jordan looks older than me, old enough to jump the broom, old enough to take care of himself. But I know he's missing someone. Sometimes a folk's eyes say more in a folk's mouth. "Watch those fingers," Aunt Tempy says, and when I look down, Jordan and her move away from me and start whispering like they's telling each other a secret. I try to listen, but I'm too much worrying about my fingers. When they turn round again, Aunt Tempy smiles, and I wonder if she was telling Jordan a secret about me. Pretty soon, the whole day wakes up, and Jordan starts arranging biscuits on a tray. Aunt Tempy puts hot sausage cakes on another tray, what's got a cover so shiny I can see my face. The kitchen smells good. Just breathing makes my stomach cry. I think of Mama and Uncle Jim already working in the field, sucking that sweet tobacco smell what makes a body feel sick all over. Mama and Uncle Jim won't eat nothing till the midday bell,
and even all day won't eat near as much as what Jordan's arranging for Master's breakfast.
Don't forget the syrup, Aunt Sempy says, and she gives Jordan a pink glass pitcher what's sitting on its own silver tray.
I wonder why Master and the missus get to eat right early in the morning, and folks what's been working got to wait till the midday bell. Don't seem fair. But I remember all my promises, push away my rightiness thoughts, and wonder when I get to eat.
After breakfast, the missus comes into the kitchen, wearing a circle dress, what bounces when she walks and shows her pretty cloth shoes. Before I put my eyes down, I see her snarling face, measuring the sugar what's left in the tin. The missus got dark hair, what's pulled back and puffed on both sides. Her eyes and nose pinched together like she ate too many wild berries what grow near the swamp. She's not minding me at all, but my mouth's dry and my heart's pounding, thinking about all my warnings and promises. I follow her cloth shoes across the wooden floor and keep drying the same spoon. A few more steps and she'll be gone. But at the door, her feet stop.
Grace, she snaps. I'm too scared to look up.
It shouldn't take all day to dry a single spoon and remove that filthy, disgusting piece of cloth from around your ankle.
After we clean the kitchen, me and Aunt Tempy go back inside our cabin. Aunt Tempy nods for me to sit on her bed and stoops to untie the ribbon round my ankle. My mama put it there. The first words I say all day cling to my throat, but I scrape 'em off and let 'em fall in jagged whispers. She said a prayer and told me I was tied to her heart forever.
Aunt Tempy lifts my chin. Her hand smells of oyster juice and lemon.
The Lord don't need a ribbon to hear your mama's prayer, she says, and you don't need a ribbon to remember your mama. The things what we love, we keep buried in our hearts.
Aunt Tempy pulls the pallet from under the bed and tucks Mama's ribbon inside the seam of the prickly wool blanket what's sitting on top.
A baby'll always be tied to a mama's heart, she says real quiet.
And I wonder how many babies is buried in Aunt Tempy's heart. Finally, we go outside. Barely been one morning, but already seems like days since Uncle Jim brought me here. I wonder if Aunt Sarah's rolling the beds and sweeping. I wonder if Willie's chasing Thomas. I wonder if anyone's missing me.
That's the smokehouse and the dairy. You'll be spending lots of time there. And that far building's the laundry.
Aunt Tempy points to a row of giant kettles hanging from a log what's resting on two large posts.
That's for the soap and candle making, she says.
She touches my cheek with her rough oyster fingers.
You'll get used to it here, Grace. You won't lose the sadness. Folks what's made a slave don't ever lose the sadness. But you'll get used to it here. Now, let's get you a muffin before we start preparing Master's next meal.
I work all day grinding corn into flour and learning how to split a chicken and pull away the bones.
Aunt Tempy tells me how Jordan traveled all the way from one end of Virginia to another by pretending to be white.
Master Allen don't know it, but Jordan's a runner.
She slaps a chicken breast in a plate of flour.
He's got a wife and baby girl he's never going to see again. Not much Master Allen can do to hurt him more than that.
A shivering sorrow spreads through my bones. No wonder Jordan never smiles.
Aunt Tempy says Master Allen and the missus have 3 meals a day. 4, if you count the tea and biscuits the missus makes Anna bring her in the middle of the night. Aunt Tempy says we eat same as folks in the field, late in the morning when early chores is done, and again in the evening, when all our chores is done. A hole's growing in my stomach, part from hunger and part from anger. Shouldn't the folks what work the hardest eat more than the folks what don't work at all? When we finish serving Master and the Missus a fine supper of chicken smothered in cream, when the kitchen's scrubbed cleaner in morning sunshine, the Missus gives us permission to eat. Finally, I meet Anna and Uncle Moses. Before she goes upstairs, the Missus looks at Anna with scrunched and shriveling eyes. "No lingering," she says. Anna's young and bony. She sits at the table with drooping shoulders, what make her look like a scared rabbit what's just waiting to scurry away. "Yes, ma'am," she says, in a sweet, silvery voice. The Missus clomps away in her cloth shoes, and her circle dress swishes the floor as she turns. Anna smiles shyly. She's got curls like mine, but her skin's a pretty copper color, what reminds me of late day sunshine. I smile back, wishing my skin was as pretty and coppery as Anna's. Jordan sits with his back straight as a wood plank and eats real quiet. Uncle Moses smiles, but it's a sorrowing kind of smile that makes me think of Mama. Uncle Moses is thin like Mama too, only he's old. Old as Aunt Sarah, with wispy hair, white and gray as yesterday's ashes. His voice is soft and whispery. "Pleased to meet you, Grace," he says. "Pleased to meet you too," I say, wondering how he's strong enough to tend the horses when his voice is frail enough to blow away. "Pleased to meet you too, Anna." Again, Anna smiles. But suddenly, before Aunt Tempy even sits down, Anna bolts up. "The Missus might need help pulling back her bed sheets," she says, nodding to me as she hurries away. I wonder what the Missus's bed sheets is made of. But more than that, I wonder how everyone's fear and sorrow is already mingling with mine.